Windows 10 Creators Update is almost here. Not a lot longer to wait, my friends. Sometime in April, perhaps April 11th. Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott talk about all the Windows things you need to know about the update, plus a few Surface secrets and something called Home Loop. What is it? We will not find out today without your help. All that and more coming up on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode number 511, recorded March 29th, 2017. Yammer yam jam. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. Create your website today and get 15% off at wordpress.com/windows. That's wordpress.com/windows. Welcome to Windows Weekly. This is the show where we talk about all things Windows. I am not Leo Laporte. I am Megan Maroney. Leo Laporte is taking a few days off, and he let me take over Windows Weekly just one more time. We'll see if he lets me do it again. And joining me, of course, are the real stars of the show, Mary Jo Foley from All About Microsoft on ZDNet, the All About Microsoft blog. Welcome to the show, Mary Jo.
Thank you very much.
And Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, of course, and welcome to you, Paul.
Thank you. To you as well.
And it's happy Windows 10 Creator Edition Day. It's rolling in as we speak. People are getting it. How excited are we about the Creators Edition?
Well,
it's funny people said that.
So actually, they're not getting it yet. So it's actually going to roll out in early April, but they announced it today. So
okay, we'll just save this episode till early April.
Yeah.
They're trying to get the that they can, right?
Yeah. I didn't even catch.
I said they're trying to stretch this announcement as long as they can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So the announcement is that it's coming in early April for real.
That's correct.
Yeah. Although, you know, I saw a number of people saying, I'm going to go get it now, which I guess you can if you believe
actually,
as we do. Yes.
I do. I have a tip about that for later in the show. So
okay. I won't spoil your tip.
Okay, so April 11th, is that the date for sure? Or is that what we suspect it's April 11th?
Yeah, it is for sure. They confirmed it in a blog post today. And before today, there was a lot of speculation on different blogs about, is it going to be April 11th? And I think some people were doubtful because that's Patch Tuesday. And they're like, would they roll out a new feature update on Patch Tuesday? But yes, that is the day.
I will say, too, I mean, I had heard earlier this year that it was going to be April 7th, and I wasn't allowed to discuss that. So I don't know if that was someone just mishearing the date or if it changed or whatever, but it was kind of always, we were always thinking, you know, finalize in March and then ship it in April.
But the Xbox One, that Creators Update, you can get right now?
That is correct.
Okay.
Although I should say, you know, with both of these things, they kind of staged the rollouts. And so, yes, technically the Xbox One Creators Update is available today. However, you could turn in your Xbox One right now and not get it. It may come out over the next, you know, so many days or whatever, depending on how they stage it. So the Windows 10 Creators Update will probably take some months, I would imagine, to roll out based on past experience.
So there are a lot
I think
of
anniversary them. Took three. It took three or more months for anniversary update to roll out.
So there are a lot of knowns and a lot of unknowns and known unknowns and unknown knowns. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny what we don't know still, even now. Like one of the things, of course, everybody asks when we get a date like this is, okay, so when can you get it if you have MSDN or volume licensing? Yeah. And the answer is Microsoft's not going to tell us till April 11th. So it could be April 11th. It might be April 12th. We don't know. They won't tell us yet when that day is, which is kind of weird.
It would be earlier than April 11th, actually. But
Yeah. The other day, another date we don't know. We know Windows, the version of Windows 10 Creators Update for phones is coming sometime after April 11th, but they, again, will not say when. They're just saying it will come sometime after that. That's all.
That is amazing.
What do we know?
What do we know?
Ashley, what we do know is that for something called the Creators Update, there's not a lot of creator stuff going on in this update. You know, I mean, the two big box features they keep talking about are the addition of like a 3D builder or 3D paint app where you can create 3D objects, which you could then print to a 3D printer, share over various 3D websites and services and so forth. But I don't really see that impacting a lot of people, frankly. And then the other one is the integration of Beam video game broadcasting capabilities, which, you know, too, kind of impacts a small audience. And then that's kind of it. You know, I mean, I don't know that there's a lot more going on. And I think a lot of people imagined there would be, you know, a GarageBand type music app that Microsoft, by the way, did promote back in August. I'm sorry, in October. Maybe an update to Movie Maker, which has disappeared. But that stuff never materialized. And so, you know, these kinds of names are silly to begin with. But it's kind of odd to me that this particular update really has nothing to do in many ways with its name.
I guess you could say, though, Windows Mixed Reality maybe is a creator's feature if you do games or build apps that use virtual reality technology.
You're stretching it.
I am stretching it.
I mean, so the problem there, of course, is that Windows Mixed Reality headsets don't even exist yet. So
right.
It's there for developers to take advantage of. The apps that may come out of that are, you know, in the distant future, really. I mean,
yeah. Did you notice, by the way, I asked them about the 3D paint app because I know you and other people had said, mm-hmm. I hope this is not replacing the regular paint app. And they confirmed that it will not, even as they go forward, that they'll continue to be the 2D paint app mm-hmm. and the 3D paint app both in the operating system together, which I think is really good.
Well, but you know that that wasn't the original plan, right? So
I
that's
know,
true.
Right.
But so many people freaked out about it that they changed their minds, thankfully. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. The other thing that's missing besides that mm-hmm. GarageBand type thing is, remember in October, they showed this app on this phone. It was a mobile app. The mm-hmm. person who was demoing it walked around a sandcastle, captured the image, and then they took that image and they edited it with 3D paint, and then they printed the sandcastle. So that app is nowhere in sight, and there's no date or any information about that app at all. So people have asked me a lot about that app. They're like, oh, is that coming alongside Creators Update? No. And we don't have any idea, even a month or a year or anything, about when that app is coming.
Right. By the way, sorry to go back to the paint real quick, but the other little tidbit that was in the blog post was that there are 100 million people that actually use paint every month.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to think that when the uproar over paint occurred, they went to look at that and that's where they got that number. Because you may recall Windows 8, Windows 8.1, whatever, different time frames, they've removed certain things from Windows, and they've always said, well, no one was using it, you know. Mm-hmm. They removed Windows Media Center, for example, and they said, well, you know, some tiny percentage of 1% or something, most of them were misclicks, you know, ever used the app. Well, I think they went and looked so they could come back and say, guys, no one uses this thing. And then they discovered, oh, wait, actually, everybody uses it.
Yeah.
I'm glad they kept that in.
Maybe it's one person using it on 100,000 PCs.
Yeah, it's probably me, actually. I use paint every single day.
Another thing they wouldn't talk about, which I thought was really interesting, is the cloud version of Creators Update. So we know there's this thing called Windows 10 Cloud that really has nothing to do with the cloud, as far as we can tell. What Windows 10 Cloud is just a version of Windows 10 that only runs Windows Store apps. And it's locked down to that. You can upgrade it to be Windows 10 Pro for money, I assume. But when I asked this week about Windows 10 Cloud, and I said, okay, are you guys going to talk about that as part of Creators Update? They said, we have absolutely nothing to say, and we're not even acknowledging it's in the product. Okay, well, it is. people are testing it. People have it.
Right,
but no,
right.
they are not commenting on that. So that makes me curious in two ways. One is, are they not going to actually make that live when Creators Update comes out and hold that until Redstone 3? Or does Creators Update Cloud have something to do with this mystery hardware event we keep hearing?
Mm-hmm. So
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, assuming... Well, we shouldn't assume this, but there's probably a lot we don't know about Windows 10 Cloud.
Right.
But as we understand it today, despite the things that make it better than, say, Windows RT was at that time, mm-hmm. I still don't quite get the point of it, right? That I don't know that there is a market of people out there who want Windows 10 as we see it today, minus all of the applications you can run on Windows 10. You know, I just don't quite get the point of that.
I know. We keep thinking maybe it's a Chromebook competitor, right? When we hear about that, like it's an education type thing or for a very, for a kind of user who needs a very stripped down and targeted or specific environment, not for a business user, or at least not for most business users.
Yeah. I mean, if you could find a business that was running most of their work off of web browser, maybe. Right. I don't know. Right. I mean, of any bit major businesses that are running big chunks of that off of UWP apps.
No. But you know what? You know what we haven't talked about? You know what we haven't talked about, though, recently? And I think this came up at Build last year, was that Google concept, what's it called? Something web apps.
Oh, PWA? Progressive
web apps.
Progressive web apps. Yeah. In fact, it's funny. I'm in the middle of writing something about how that is, in fact, the future of apps on Windows 10. But
Yeah.
Yep.
So say you put progressive web apps in the Windows 10 store, maybe, mm-hmm. Then that gets way more interesting in terms of just running Windows store apps.
Well, thanks for ruining my article, Mary Jo.
Hey, I'm good with spoilers today.
No, I think you're onto something, obviously. UWP apps have gotten no traction at all. And for whatever it's worth, I know, you know, I've complained about this a lot, and I know maybe people listen, it's like, okay, here he goes again, that kind of thing. But honestly, I look at this situation as a little bit of not an advantage, but an opportunity in the sense that truly cross-platform compatible apps are kind of where it's at, right? If this could ever work. And progressive web apps are one way to get there. There are little things in Windows that have been there for a while via Chrome or Internet Explorer back in the day where you could kind of treat a web app like a native app. You know, it has its own window and you can put it in the taskbar and you kind of use it next to your regular apps and everything. Of course, what you kind of need on top of that are offline capabilities and kind of system integration capabilities. And I think that's the type of stuff that progressive web apps bring with the added benefit that they work cross-platform. You know, and so you could potentially use the same app on a Windows 10 desktop or an iPhone or, you know, whatever. I mean, I think that's kind of the beauty of that. And so we could go back in time a couple of years to build conferences from a few years ago. And the conversation we've always had was universal Windows platform apps are interesting. The notion of universal apps is very interesting. But if they're tied to Windows, they're not really that universal, right?
Yeah, right.
We've thought, you know, maybe Android would be one out for Microsoft on mobile, whatever. But I actually think progressive web apps may be kind of the future app platform on Windows, really, not UWP.
So it's the idea.
And now I don't have to write it.
Is the idea that they wouldn't have to constantly be saying, oh yeah, we have this on iOS and Android, and they're just sort of accepting that a lot of people are on those platforms more than Windows phones, and they can just say, you know, these are our universal apps.
There's a lot to it, but I think the fundamental strength of this kind of app platform is that it's the same thing as any other cloud service. You update it once up on the back end and everybody gets that update. You know, if I'm running, for example, I use the Google Inbox web app as my email app, right? And in Windows 10, I can pin it to the taskbar and it kind of pops up in this window that doesn't look like a browser window. It's just a plain window, but it's the web app. And if Google updates that thing, which they do from time to time, I'll actually get a little note that says refresh the windows, just like you refresh any browser window. The central problem with Windows 10, when you think about it, is this need to update it all the time. And it's not just the system itself, it's all the apps that have to be updated. if you're just doing that once up in the cloud, you don't have to do it on 400 plus million PCs individually on different schedules where everyone's on different versions of the app because they're not updating or they're only updating sometimes or they're on some version of current branch, for business where they get updated on a slower schedule, whatever it might be. This gives Microsoft that thing that they've been talking about wanting, which is getting everyone on the same version of everything and being cross-platform.
Yeah.
So, this has been a dream since the days of Java or whatever, and there's always been issues around, performance and the lack of a native look and feel and the lack of native capabilities on the platform and all that kind of stuff. But I think we're finally getting to the point where this technology becomes viable. And they're supporting it in Microsoft Edge.
What about security updates? Will there be any security updates in the creators update?
Yeah, there are some enterprise features around security in the update. There's some new things around Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection Service. So they're making that even more secure, more manageable. What else are they doing? Some things around Windows Analytics Dashboard. They have a UEFI conversion tool that will allow people to manually convert Windows 7 devices using legacy BIOSes to UEFI. So they have a lot of incremental things like that. But I think looking at Creators Update, what could be the biggest feature that will be interesting to businesses is the increased level of control they have on their updates. So now you have all these new pause and defer options for longer periods of time if you're on pro, enterprise, or education, but not home. And I think that's going to be super interesting to people who've been complaining about their machines restarting in the middle of the night, who want to defer updates longer. So you can actually defer some updates up to 365 days with these new settings. And I think if you're a business and you're looking at Creators Update and you see that, you're like, okay, that is why I might want this version of Windows 10.
They've gotten a lot of criticism about that, right? That was a big thing for people. Click this X, and then that meant that it would regularly schedule you.
Yep.
So I guess they were listening to people.
Yeah.
It's ironic in a way that in order to get updates on your own schedule, you'll have to force feed yourself an update right away, right?
Yeah.
In other words, what I'm looking for is the ability to schedule these things better. But first, I have to take the update.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about what was promised in the Creators Update versus what we think is going to be delivered next month. And, a lot of the promise was that this was going to be aimed directly at creatives who now use Macs, that, that these people are wanting something new, and here we have it for you in software and hardware, too, included in that. So what do you think? I mean, do you think that there are going to be a lot of people switching sides?
Not because of this. Actually, let me ask you, no, but seriously, I mean, in other words, I think the reason people might move over would be because of Surface hardware or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But let me ask you a question. You use a Mac, right?
I do.
This is not a sabotage type thing or an ambush. I'm legitimately asking what your opinion is of this. What exactly did Apple do for creatives? I mean, was there something in the system that made this platform attractive to creatives, or was it just an Apple vibe thing? The people who are creative feel like they're in the Apple camp because that's I don't want to say the marketing or whatever, but that's the general vibe of the platform. Like, we perceive Apple to be creative. It's a creative company. I want to be associated with that. I'm a creative person. I use a Mac. I mean, was there something in the Mac that made it better for creative people?
That's a really good question. I definitely feel like it is the vibe. It is the design, the hardware, like you were saying. And I'm talking about, when creatives came maybe in the late 90s, the 2000s, when Jobs came back. Yeah, I mean, I guess there was software. There was GarageBand software. There was, there was photo software. So I think there was that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt. I remember that Photoshop was very slow to come to Mac OS X, for example, back in the day. I remember that one of the big things about those early Mac laptops in particular, or the big desktop machines, was that they were very stylish. I mean, in an age when PCs were all very beige and kind of plain looking, you know, Macs were colorful at first, and then they became really professional looking. And I think they were kind of on the leading edge of that. Mm-hmm. You know, this stuff in there for...
Wasn't there software and applications that only worked on the Mac? I feel like people who were in fields like advertising mm-hmm. and art-related fields always had to use a Mac because there were certain programs that they used that didn't work on Windows. I don't know what those programs are. But,
if you were to ask Andrew over at Guys from Cranes, or if you would ask Alex or Tony or the guys over at Twit, what do they use in the back end for all of their recording stuff and everything? I guarantee it's not Macs.
No, you're right. But when you talk about, I mean, my dad was in advertising, like and so I'm talking about early Macs, like 80s, 90s, like that was word processing, things that were just easier to do. I think when you talked about creatives, like now you don't think of a creative as someone who's not comfortable with technology. But I think there was a time when that was true, that with most like writers or artists, they weren't the same people that were, you know, playing with their Commodore 64. And I'm not saying those people weren't creative. We know, of course, that they are. They're up to make beautiful companies.
I heard what you said, Megan.
I'm not saying they're not, but there was a lot, you know, writers and artists, if you think about that, there was the idea, the feeling that, you know, you couldn't use this IBM personal computer. It would, you know, stifle your creativity. We need something more. So I do think maybe it isn't down like in the, you know, the hardware or the software. I mean, down deep inside the hardware, it was how it looked and made people believe that as a creative they needed that. So yeah. Thank you, Alex.
Nice. It's a video of Alex. Well, here's my theory. I think that this switching phenomenon, however big it may be, I don't actually think it's all that big, frankly, but I think it has more to do with Apple coasting, in the sense that Apple, rightfully so, probably felt like that part of the market was sewn up. I don't actually believe that they've done anything meaningful for creatives in a very long time, but whatever, it kind of doesn't matter. I just think that they've kind of coasted on that one. And the Surface hardware is not the first really nice PC hardware that's come out in the past couple of years. I mean, no offense to Microsoft, but there have been ThinkPad X1 Carbons that have been incredible for a long time. Dell XPS laptops, which have been incredible for a really long time. HP has a variety of devices that have been incredible for a really long time, including the thing that you can't see that I'm using, which is a 34-inch curved screen, widescreen with a sound bar built in and integrated wireless charging and all kinds of other cool stuff. It's an awesome PC. There's nothing like it on the Mac side. It's not just Microsoft doing this. But I think perception matters. And frankly, if I'm right about this, the general vibe thing on the Mac side, it makes sense that when there's all this good news around, so let's say Surface in this case, that those kinds of people would be easily attracted to the hot new thing. I think that's what happens for those kind of people. But I also think there are tens of millions or hundreds of millions, whatever the number is, of Mac users that are not contemplating switching at all because they're perfectly happy with the thing that they have. And you don't screw around with something that just works. So I don't know. I would, you know, to go back to your question from like 25 minutes ago, no, I don't think there's anything in the creators update that would attract anyone from the Mac to come over to Windows. Not at all. Not even slightly. I do think there are really cool PC hardware form factors and particular devices, including Surface devices, that, you know, may be a draw for some people. But it's not really related to this stuff. There's really not much in here except for really kind of isolated niche kind of groups of people.
So we mentioned the Xbox One creators update is already rolling out. Is there more to say about that?
Mary Jo?
I'm trying to think of something witty, but no. you know right, what? Well, if I got to say, if I look at creators update, to me, I almost feel like they should have called this release gamers update. I feel like there's a lot of gaming stuff in Windows 10 creators update. And so it's, in a way, it's not surprising it's coming out to Xbox first, because then you'll have the ability to, you know, run the both games. If you buy one game, you can run it on either platform, all that kind of stuff. So I guess I'm not surprised. I feel like, this is hopefully a good release for gamers, because I say hopefully because sometimes when I say it's a big gamer release, people who are really big gamers are like, no, it's not. There's nothing for gamers in here. And I'm like, well, okay.
Well, you gotta pretend I know. Yeah, it's like hard. Right. So that's like kind of the central weirdness of the gaming functionality, right? So there are things like game mode that make games run faster on Windows 10. There's no one's going to complain about that. You click a switch, whatever. It works or it doesn't. They've integrated their Beam service into Windows 10 and on Xbox One, right? And so people who are game broadcasters, they fit into a very narrow niche of the population. I think we can agree to that, right? Like, these guys are by nature professionals of a type, you know, that they have specific software. They set up, you know, multi-screen solutions that they use where they've got the game over here and their broadcasting screen over here, and they're using particular software and services to make that happen. So integrating Beam into Windows 10 is like, well, I'm not really clear who that benefits exactly, because I think the people who are creators in that area are using very sophisticated tools to get that stuff done. And they're not necessarily interested in this kind of functionality. Now, on the Xbox One, actually, Beam integration, I think, makes a little more sense. And so it's cool that that's happening today. I've only played with that a little bit so far. I have some questions around whether you can record live sessions and so forth and save them for later, maybe post them to YouTube or something. And I'm not 100% sure you can do that. And there are some neat features in Beam where you can interact with viewers and so on. But I just think that kind of thing, that kind of simplicity makes more sense on a dedicated console where everything is simple, you know? And I think once you move to a PC, and by nature, if you're going to be playing a real, like, modern game, 3D graphics and so forth, and broadcast it to the world, you need kind of a expensive computer, right? And it's a complex setup. And I, you know, integrating Beam into Windows 10, I you know, I'm glad it's fine that it's there. It's not a bad thing, obviously, but I'm just not sure what the traction is there.
Quill's Toxic in our chat room thinks it's important that the Xbox One gets a Bitstream audio update.
Yep. Yeah, which I didn't even cover in my own story about this. And so, and so they'll be bringing Dolby Atmos to Xbox One and that. So, yeah, there is some cool stuff. They brought some parental controls from Windows 10 over to the Xbox. There's a goofy kind of feature, I think, for, you know, hardcore gamers called Copilot, which is basically, I think, like a parenting feature where you have two Xbox controllers. And it's like when you take a driving test and the other person has a wheel too, and they can fix it if you screw up. You know, it's how you teach someone, not just a child, I guess, but, you know, any beginning gamer, how to play a game. I mean, honestly, eventually that child will be teaching you how to play the game. But it's, you know, it's kind of a neat idea.
It's good to maybe teach your parents how to play the game.
Yep. This performance update, you know, there's always performance. I mean, I think the biggest way they've improved performance in the Xbox One, it's actually kind of funny, is they've made everything like fewer clicks. And so if you want to get to the guide, it's one click of a button instead of two. There's a similar thing for multitasking. Same thing. It's fewer steps, you know, to get to where you're going. So it's, I don't know that the underlying system is any faster, but the process for getting to where you're going is faster.
So is there anything more we need to cover the creative updates before we move on to the Surface?
We should mention Surface Hub here, Microsoft in their blog post today about this called out, by the way, Windows 10 Creators Update's coming to Surface Hub. And they said a few things about it. They said there'll be a new and improved start screen, allowing you to sign on with your credentials, access your Office 365 apps and OneDrive materials. Skype for Business will be improved as part of the setup. They talked about Whiteboard. And then they said, we'll tell you more all about this before April 11th. And that's all we know about what Surface Hub is going to get that's unique to Creators Update. But it's interesting they bothered to call that out, I think.
But is there going to be a game mode on Surface Hub?
No, hopefully no. But given how they're putting gaming in everything these days, maybe yes. I don't know. Crazy, but yeah.
Right.
So what's the Surface news this week, the other Surface news?
So there's a couple parts. One is Microsoft's going to be expanding availability of some of their Surface devices to other countries. So they're expanding, as of today, March 29th, Surface Dial users now, people in Australia, Canada, and New Zealand can get Studio and Dial. And they can order them now, and they'll begin shipping on April 20th. Meanwhile, people in Austria, China, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, and the UK can buy are going to be able to buy the Surface Book with the performance base, which is what Microsoft announced last October. They can pre-order now, start getting that April 20th. So that the performance base, I'm having trouble remembering this. It has nothing to do with the tablet part of Surface, but they did something to the base to amp it up, right?
Yes. So it has more battery, much better GPU.
Yep.
And I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yep. that's pretty much it.
So, yeah. So this, what's interesting about them announcing these two things today is earlier in the week, I wrote up what I talked about on Windows Weekly last week, which is we still believe there's going to be a spring hardware launch that Microsoft's going to have. And we've been assuming up until now that Surface Book 2 would debut at this launch. And I've been hearing pretty consistently from my sources now that there will not be Surface Book 2 at this launch. And now that I see these hardware announcements from this week, I feel even more strongly that there will not be a Surface Book 2 because they're just at this point expanding availability of the things they already have. So it would be kind of weird now to announce Surface Book 2 when all these other countries are just starting to get the Surface Book with the performance base and the Surface Studio now. Does that mean there won't be a new version of the Surface Studio if there is this hardware launch? I don't know. There could be. What about a Surface Pro 5? We talked about that a little last week. I haven't heard definitively there will or won't be Surface Pro 5 at the launch, but if there is, I'm betting it's kind of an incremental update that they're going to make to Surface Pro 5, maybe a new processor, better battery, but nothing like crazy in terms of changing the form factor.
A lot of angst over this, by the way.
You are?
No, not me. I mean, I've seen a lot of angst about this online because I in my article about this, wrote the same thing you just said, which is, you know, the timing of this indicates we're not going to get updates here on those particular devices. And there's a real, I mean, people feel a real need for these things to be updated. And I'm sort of devil's advocating it. I'm turning that into a word, yes. In the sense that, you know, I mean, do they need to?
I know.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think people just want more, newer, they haven't updated the Surface Pro since the 4, which was like 2015, right? Like there were no new Surface Pro devices last year. So I think we're due for a new Surface Pro. That would be my guess. But Surface Book is pretty new. And the performance base addition to it makes me feel like that was kind of like Surface Book 1.5 in a way. So do they really need to do the 2 now? I don't think so. I think they could do Surface Book 2 later this year, maybe.
Do either of you feel like you need a Surface Book 2 with like the clamshell that we've heard about, that type of laptop style Surface Book 2? Is that something that you really want?
I think it makes more sense than the current product, right? I know some people, there's always those people, right? And that sounded critical. I didn't mean it like that. There are always, I didn't mean it like that. You know, those people. Sorry. That's literally not what I meant. There are always people who will use specific functionality. They'll pop the screen off. They'll write on it with the pen. They'll use it like a tablet. I actually think that the Surface Book is kind of subpar for that kind of thing. It's a laptop first. I don't ever want that thing to pop off. I don't ever use that. I just don't really care about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of most people. I think most people who would use this product feel that way. I also think the Surface Book is way too expensive. And when you compare it to, say, a Surface Pro 4, it's anywhere from $500 to $1,000 or more expensive than the Surface Pro. And so the rumors that we saw recently suggested the pricing would become closer to that of Surface Pro. It would be a non-detachable standard laptop form factor. And I think that's closer to what people were asking for. You know, when the Surface Pro launched at the end of 2015, I said, you know, people have been asking for a Surface Ultrabook, like a MacBook Air style device. They certainly have not been asking for a laptop, you know, a bigger, heavier device, let alone one where the screen pops off. I don't think anyone was asking for that. Mm-hmm. And so the sales have kind of borne that out, right? Surface Book sales are very low. So, yeah, I mean, I'd welcome that. And yet here they are expanding the availability of this product that I just ridiculed. So they're not getting rid of it, I guess. And, you know, maybe that could be the high-end version and maybe that clamshell thing, that's been rumored will be the low version. Maybe it ties into what Mary Jo was talking about earlier with Windows 10 Cloud. Maybe there's a Surface laptop that's going to be based on, well, it doesn't have to be based on ARM, I guess. It could be based on ARM or not. It could be Cloud OS. And it's just not ready yet. It's just too early in the year. It's too early. Yeah. Whatever. I don't know.
Whatever they announce, if it is a clamshell thing, I just want to say this again, because remember what Microsoft keeps saying. We're only going to create a Surface branded device if we're creating a new hardware category. Like, they keep saying this consistently. So what is new about a clamshell laptop, right? Like, there's millions of them out there. They have tons of partners making these. So there's got to be something different or something we're not thinking about. If there is a clamshell laptop, like, they're not just going to come out with a regular Ultrabook. That would just defeat their whole premise of why they do Surface, right? So I don't know what this new hardware category is, but I think if there is a spring hardware launch, which I believe there will be, there's going to be some device that they consider to be a new category device. And, you know, they play, like I said to somebody on Twitter, they play a little fast and loose with this idea of a new category. Like, to them, the Surface Studio was a brand new category, even though we called it an all-in-one. And we're like, well, that's not a brand new category. Like, you have a lot of partners making that, right? But they are like, no, the Hinge made it a totally new hardware category. So I think if they do a clamshell, there'll be something about it that will make them feel good about saying, it's not just a clamshell laptop. It's not just an Ultrabook. It's a blah. They're going to call it something else, right? But what? I don't know.
Was the Surface Studio a new product category?
That's what they claim it was.
Yeah.
Like, just because you could adjust it and it was big?
And you could. Yeah, the Hinge is what they kept saying made it different from all the other all-in-ones, which, okay, you could argue that. Isn't it still an all-in-one? Is it a brand new category? I don't know.
What if the clamshell laptop, you wear it on your face for mixed reality?
I keep thinking there's a mixed reality thing to this. I don't know what. Sure. Hopefully not on your face. Hopefully not a laptop on your face.
Okay. A girl can dream. That's what I always say. So anything else about the Surface this week?
What else? Let me see. No, I think that's most of it. I don't know. Like I said, I'm always kind of amazed by the way people react to things on Twitter. I don't know why that still amazes me in 2017, but a lot of negativity around this stuff, you know. And I don't know. It seems to me like Surface has always been on kind of a slow boil. You know, frankly, they do have this way of getting it out into the world slowly, right? They'll release in US, Canada first, and they'll, you know, kind of go from there. So I this is kind of in keeping with what they've been doing. But again, yeah, but I think the weird bit is just how that might impact these updates that a lot of us feel are very necessary. I think a bigger deal for Surface, frankly, than say a Surface Pro 5 that was just the same machine with a new processor would be switching the platform over to USB-C and Thunderbolt 3, right? I think that's super important. And maybe that's something they want to do all at the same time, or maybe that, I don't know. So we'll see, but you know, we're 2 days away from April 1st or whatever, which I guess is the chance for all kinds of shenanigans, but we're also getting yeah. close to, you know, the time for what we thought would be this launch. Right. And what we still do think there's something coming. And so I'm just curious when they're going to announce it. I have a big trip planned in April, so I'm hoping it happens when I'm away. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Tell Donna when you're going. She seems to be able to schedule things when you're away. Ashley Quint on Twitter is saying, what if it's a laptop with built-in LTE cellular? It could be that, but like, then how do you claim that's a brand new category? Like, what would they bring to that would make it new?
I don't understand the fixation with this kind of stuff. The built-in cellular capability is a lot like a pen. For that small segment of people who actually needs that kind of thing, it's going to be huge, right? It's a big deal but that's a really tiny segment of people. What everyone does have is a smartphone that they tether and they use that data. And, you know, it's a single account. They don't have to have another account with a base price built into it every month and whatever. I mean, there's almost no reason to do that separately for most people. And again, I know there are certain people that need it, but I just don't see it being any kind of a game changer. It's kind of like the 3D app and the creators update. It's like, yeah, for the three people that need that, that's really cool. But for the vast majority of people, I don't really think it impacts them at all.
I mean, Microsoft did talk that up a lot when they first announced they were bringing Windows 10 to ARM. They made a big deal out of this built-in cellular part, right? So it is something they are planning to really highlight, but when? I kept thinking that was more like Redstone 3 timing, maybe?
Because they literally timed it for that. So that makes plenty of sense. But don't you wonder on that, what's the chicken and the egg on that little tidbit, right? In other words, at the time when they announced that they're moving Windows 10 to ARM or to Qualcomm Snapdragon in particular, they talk about the two things that chipset is really good at, right? Which is battery life and integrated cellular. That's a feature of that chipset.
Yeah.
So were people actually asking for integrated cellular, or had they made the decision for other reasons to move Windows 10 to that processor? And then it's like, well, what are the advantages of this thing? Integrated cellular. Oh, let's talk about that. You know, I just don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, if you had a small Windows 10 tablet today that had integrated cellular and you were online all the time, how would that change anything for you out in the world? Because you're online all the time anyway. I don't understand, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
I know. I must hear from every single person who wants built-in cellular, because I hear from a lot of people about it.
Right. Okay.
What about tethering your phone? Like, why not? Right. And they're like, oh, I don't get good phone coverage where I am, or I don't want to use up my phone plan.
Why would you get it on the device?
I don't know.
What would that change?
I know. Maybe they think they could switch carriers somehow, or almost like Google Fi. Maybe like you get placed on the network that's the best in the area that you're on. I don't know.
A lot of cell phone providers are not allowing you to tether anymore. Like if you change your plan, and you know the unlimited plans now don't include tethering. A lot of them don't. So I could see, but
But even in that case, the argument that we're making here is you're paying X number of dollars per month for a plan that doesn't allow tethering, and now we have to set up a different account for the device that lets you get online. And so those things added together, the cost of those two, is it less than just getting a plan that allows for tethering? Probably not. I know that tethering impacts the battery, and you could plug it into the device to charge it, but then it would impact the battery of the device. I get all that stuff. But I feel like we're always shooting for this magical missing feature that will put everything over the top for everybody. You know, like Continuum was kind of like that. Like, oh, this is the thing, you know. It's not the thing. Nobody uses it. And I don't mean literally nobody. I mean, again, as with everything else we've discussed today, there's some group of people that does use it, and they love it, and they rely on it even. But I think for the vast majority of people, it just doesn't factor into the day to day.
So existentially speaking, are we still looking for the thing, or are you saying there is no thing ever?
This is, do you ever play Portal? it was Portal, you know, the cake is a lie. I mean, I don't think there's a way to answer that.
Okay.
But I will say that the cake was not a lie.
Okay, the cake was not a lie.
It's important to remember.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about Microsoft Office, but first I want to talk about one of our sponsors, WordPress. WordPress, I've used WordPress forever. I originally used WordPress. I had a blog on WordPress, and then websites evolved. But WordPress has always been there, and now WordPress will allow you to have your site, whether it's just a blog or if it's more. If you have a small business, or if you just have a personal brand, you just want to have a site that's more than just, you know, you talking about what you had for lunch that day. Although you can totally talk about what you had for lunch on a WordPress site. WordPress is easy. It's simple to put together. You don't need to know a lot about HTML. It's very, very easy to use. And it's great for small businesses as well as people. Whether you've been in businesses forever or whether you're just starting out, you need a website. Everyone needs a website. And that's the first question people always ask me, like, how do you build a website? I just want to be able to build a website. So you can do this. You can join the WordPress community. It's a global community. 27% of all websites run on WordPress. Even if you don't have experience building a website, WordPress can guide you through the process. They have so many customizable themes just to get you started, and then you can go from there. You can pick a template and then make it look your own. So you're not going to look like every other site out there. You can you'll get a built-in search engine optimization, so you don't have to worry about hiring someone extra to do that. That is done for you within WordPress. They also have a feature called Publicize. I really like this, that will let you automatically share your posts to all your social media networks. So you don't have to post on your blog and then put it on Twitter and put it on Facebook. If you're a small business and you're concerned about time, this is great. Their Publicize feature, I highly recommend it. You can also share previously published posts. So when you build your website on WordPress, you're part of the community. You're not all alone out there. You can get support 24/7. So you're in good company. You can get answers to your questions and then get back to getting your stuff done. Get back to your business. So unless your business is designing websites, you probably want to use WordPress to do most of it for you. And then you get back to whatever your business might be. You can get started right now. You can get 15% off any new plan purchase. All you have to do is go to wordpress.com/windows. Don't forget to add windows out there so they know that you got there through Windows Weekly. Then you can create your website and find the membership plan that's right for you. So that's wordpress.com/windows for 15% off your brand new website. I'm super excited. I'm going to start building a new website there using WordPress, which I've always used and loved. And I thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, let's get back to Microsoft Office. There's some Office 365 updates available for March.
Oh, boy, there sure are. So I'll do this for your edification and also just because I like to complain. Every month, Microsoft announces the features that they've released to Office 365 that month. Every month, it is a confusing array of things because Microsoft obviously has very many Office applications that run across multiple platforms. So there's two versions of some apps that run on Windows. They have the mobile app versions. They have the full Office suite, Office 2016. Although, by the way, they're not really using that term anymore. I don't know if you noticed that. They're kind of walking away from the phrase Office 2016. But there's a version of that for the Mac as well. There's a version for Android and iOS. There are sometimes specific app versions that run on the larger devices like the iPad and so forth. And then there's the versions that run on the web. And then there are Office 365 offerings that span commercial and consumer. And then there are Office Insider programs that have different rings where they release features at different times to different parts of the Office Insider program and then eventually to the general public. And so if you had any trouble following everything I just said, welcome to my world. It's insanity. And I would say Office is the one thing that makes Windows these days look simple by comparison. It's actually far crazier than Windows. And so let me give you one example. This month, they implemented co-authoring in Excel, what I will call Excel 2016, meaning the desktop version of Excel for Windows. I got to look it up because there's no way I would ever know which version. Yes, it's rolling out for Office 365 subscribers who are in Office Insider Fast, right, which is the fastest way to get new features through Office 365. If you're using a commercial version of Office 365, which I guess you would have to be, your workplace would have to actually okay that. In fact, they'd have to implement it for you for that to happen. If you are on Excel for iOS, you can get this feature through, but you have to be on the Office Insider program as a consumer. It could be fast or slow. It doesn't matter. This feature is actually implemented already in Excel Mobile for Android and Windows and in Excel Online on the web at office.com or office365.com. It is coming to the Mac soon. Right? Now, it's more complicated than what I just said, too, because remember, this thing is in, I have to keep looking because it's so complicated. It's in Office Insider Fast. And so it's probable that maybe next month or the month after that, they will move it to Office Insider Slow. They may make it generally available to Office Insider across commercial and consumer at some point. And then sometime in 2017, this feature will be rolled out to Excel 2016 for Windows broadly, where anyone can get it. Does that make sense?
No, I think you need to put it in an Excel spreadsheet.
I think he does.
Yeah, you really can. Yeah. So all of the features.
You know what's even more confusing, by the way, than Excel and Word and PowerPoint when we talk about the different versions? Outlook, to me, is the most confusing. Like, so many times people will say to me, I'm having a problem with Outlook. Okay, there are like 50 versions of Outlook. Like, which one? And then they'll just say, like, Outlook for Windows. And I'm like, which one? Because do you mean Outlook.com? Do you mean, like, Outlook the native app? Yep. Do you mean, like, Outlook web app that's not called Outlook web app anymore? It's just like, oh.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, it's funny because when people say Outlook to me, I assume they mean Outlook for Windows, the desktop application, like Outlook 2016. And I'm almost pretty consistently never correct on that. A lot of times they are referring to Outlook.com or all those other things you said. Yeah, it's really confusing. You know, the other thing that's a little bit confusing about these Office announcements, which literally do come once a month, is that they often talk about things that they released earlier in the month, and it's just generally available. And there's two of them in this list: Microsoft Teams, which was a big deal, the Microsoft Slack competitor. Was released broadly to meaning to all Office 365 commercial subscribers and to Office 365 Education, I believe. And Microsoft Bookings, which is a kind of a, you know, most calendar app or calendar apps or services have this feature where you can try to plug, you want to set up a meeting with multiple people and it will actually help you find free times. That kind of thing works really well when everyone's in the same organization. But what Microsoft Bookings allows you to do is schedule appointments with customers or people outside of your organization. So it's kind of like that, you know, free time thing, but for people outside the org.
What's weird about Bookings? Can I throw two cents in here? Bookings is only available to you if you have Office 365 Business Premium. So.
Yep.
Like, it's weird. Why isn't this on other Office 365 plans? It's not on anything except Business Premium.
I don't know how they keep track of this. I really don't.
Me neither.
They
have a giant spreadsheet. They do.
They have to. Yeah. I don't. It's crazy. There's also, you know, like autosave, for example. One of the interesting things that happened in the mobile app world is because of the nature of these devices, if you're creating a document in a Google Docs app or Microsoft Word on Android or iOS or whatever it might be, typically you don't have to, hit a little save button. It will auto save it for you. It's funny because those apps are really kind of immature or basic compared to the desktop apps that we use every day. But the desktop apps we use every day don't have a true auto save feature. I know they have auto save, but auto save in say Microsoft Word 2016 is one of those things where every 5 minutes or something, it will save the document. This new autosave, which is all one word, autosave, what it really means is it's saving it as you go. Like you could type a letter and it's going to save it, you know, so it's always saving it. And the rundown on this thing is it's just so strange, but it's Office 365 subscribers in Office Insider Fast, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on Windows Desktop, only for files saved in SharePoint, Online, OneDrive, or OneDrive for Business. And it's like, like you have to meet this incredible matrix of requirements, you know, in order to use this feature. But if you hit all those points, you no longer have to ever hit a save button again.
I know. So. I tweeted when they announced this week, and immediately, of course, the people who are like cloud conspiracists were all like, "You should not be encouraging people to save their documents on the cloud." Yikes. Okay, well, there you go. this is how this works. If you're not saving your documents in SharePoint Online, OneDrive, or OneDrive for Business, this autosave thing doesn't work that way. Well, you should tell people that. I just did. I just tweeted that. And then it's like, but don't tell people to save locally. I'm like, guys, these days are over. Like, you got to move on. Move past this. Yeah.
So,
just a little mini rant.
Yeah. Anyway, there's more, but we don't have to step through every single new feature because we only have 2 hours. But you know, just the matrix of versions of the apps and which platforms they're running on and which version of Office 365 you have to have and if you have to be on which version of Insider. And, you know, it's
complicated.
It makes me, this is why I curl into a fetal position every night at below my desk and I just cry for a little while.
Well, as long as you bring up the cloud and the fact that we all need to accept that we're on it, is now a good time to talk about the docs.com scandal, if you will, docs.com gate.
Sure. But like let me say one thing about Skype first before we do that. Because there was one more Office Cloud thing that was announced this week. And then it's another one that's incredibly complicated to explain who this is for.
Weird.
Skype for Business got two new calling features this week, right? And these features are for, I believe they are only for people who are on Office 365 E5, the highest end Office 365 plan, because you have to have the Cloud PBX capability to take advantage of these features. So one of them is auto attendant, which gives you automated answering and call routing. And then there's also a call queue capability, which allows incoming calls to be routed to the next available agent in the order it was received. You know, when you hear that message, that's this thing. So these two things are interesting because right now Microsoft is kind of fighting off Amazon and Google in this space. They are both coming on with their own alternatives to Skype for Business. They're much newer. Amazon has that Chime service that we talked about recently, where it's a conferencing system that they're trying to implement on AWS. And Google's redoing Hangouts like completely to try to appeal more to enterprise conferencing customers. So Microsoft's out there now. They've got all these Skype capabilities at the high end, and they're trying to make sure they have even more robust capabilities for competing with people like Amazon, who I think just announced a call contact center offering on AWS this week. So it's turning into a bloody war at the top of the video conferencing space, people. Just be aware.
So what is the difference between Skype for Business and Microsoft Teams?
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's an awesome question.
It is.
No, it's a smarter Teams, question than you may even realize.
It is. So Teams is like Slack, right? And there are some people who, when Microsoft announced Teams, said, okay, so now I'm totally lost. Like, when do I use Teams versus Skype for Business versus, even some people were throwing in Microsoft Planner, Yammer. They're like, I Office 365 groups, like Change. There's so many things. Yep. Yep. And now I'm like lost. What I
basically
use for
what you do is you spin a roulette wheel, and whichever one it lands on, you use that to collaborate.
I know. Yeah. So they're all meant to be for slightly different purposes. And
please explain all those different purposes.
I know. So Microsoft's pitch is always, you know what, we like to have a lot of different offerings for people and let them choose which one makes the most sense for their business. Like, you don't have to get rid of email if you want to use Teams, but you could if you wanted to.
Darwinian.
Yeah. So the two of them do overlap to some extent, but not completely. You know, if you know how people use Slack, it's more like a group, constant group collaboration type system. And I don't feel like people use Skype for Business that way as much. They use it more as like a conferencing system when you want to have a meeting. So you can use Skype for Business and Skype inside of Teams, or you will be able to once they do more integration. But yeah, there's a ton of overlap. In fact, I wrote something last year, I remember. There's a 60-page white paper that Microsoft put out about when to use which product in the Office family in this space. And so you have to read 60 white paper pages to actually understand how all of these things fit together. But they do seem to have a master plan. I'm not saying it's a good one, but they have one.
Well, what I feel like the promise of Teams is what I want, and I don't know if they'll really deliver, which is, you know, you're collaborating with someone, you're having a conversation, and instead of having to say, like, the week before, like, I think it'd be best for us to have a Skype conversation, or I think we can handle this, you know, through phone or text, to be in the middle of that collaboration and then say, you know what, this, if we're collaborating by chat, you know, or Slack, or, you know, to be able to just say, you know, I need to talk to you face-to-face. We need to be on the phone for this. And then just to beep and do that. Like, that seems to be a common problem that people have that Teams promises to solve. I know you guys have both used earlier versions of it, right? Does it do that?
I have not used Teams. No. I've used Slack before, but I never have actually tried Teams. And you know why it's weird for me? Because I'm an office of one. And right now in Teams, you can't invite people who are outside of your own Office 365 group. So I don't really have anybody to be in a team with. I'm sad. I'm by myself. So I haven't really used it. But I agree. That's kind of the promise. The promise from Microsoft's standpoint is you're going to be able to integrate all these other Office 365 services that you have, because Teams is just another Office 365 service. So the idea is you could be in Teams and, you know, say, let's Skype in the middle of your collaboration session, you know, or you could say, let's move this to Planner, or let's do a Yammer Yam Jam. Do people say that? I think they do.
This is like a Yammer Yam Jam. Yeah.
Let's Yam Jam. That's a thing. It is now, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's their promise, is you have all these other tools at your fingertips and you can kind of go in and out of these different services and use it in kind of a mix or match way. I don't think they're there yet. They have a lot of integrations to do. I know Planner is one people ask me a lot about, and they're like, "What? How do I use Planner with Teams?" Because it's like a lightweight collaboration planning tool. And it seems like it would be cool to be able to plan with somebody together in Teams using Planner. Microsoft hasn't even announced that To-Do product they have yet, which is the successor to Wunderlist. They bought that app. And once they have that, then that's going to integrate in with Teams too. So you're going to have To-Do, Microsoft To-Do, and you're going to have Planner, and you're going to have Skype. You're going to have even more things at your fingertips. Sure. Yay.
Never have too many.
Never can have too many.
All right, now we can talk about docs.com.
Yeah.
Docs.com 8.
Yes.
Mary Jo, you said it was a tempest in a teapot, perhaps not as serious as some security journalists like to make it out to be, but people were putting their documents on docs.com and then finding out that anyone could search them online.
So the reason I said I thought it was a little tempest in a teapot is, what is docs.com? So docs.com, when Microsoft revamped it, was a public sharing service. So the idea was, if you have a document of any kind, like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Sway, and you want to share it with people, your resume, you could post it to this site called docs.com. And you could say to people, hey, go to docs.com and you can look at my lesson plan, or you can look at my resume. So to me, that kind of implied, like, you wouldn't put your passwords up there, right? Or would you? I don't know. I think that's why I'm like, wait, people are storing their passwords in a Word doc and putting it on docs.com? Why?
Well, by the way, speaking of confusing, you ever try to ask Microsoft, what's the difference between docs.com, OneDrive.com, you know, OneDrive for Business, yeah, right? I mean, they've kind of changed this over time.
Have,
right. And I the way I understand it, I could be completely wrong because it's Wednesday and they might have changed it already, is that it's really designed, well, or it's not really, it's currently designed basically for sharing purposes, right? It's a place where you go to share documents with the public. That's the point of it. I think that's the point of it. Right. So
I think so.
Why were you, why are you putting passwords in a document and putting it on a sharing website? You know, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But
I think the thing I read, and I didn't look that closely into this because I kind of dismissed it, which maybe I should not have done so lightly, but I think what they were saying is, in some cases, when people were implementing it as a, like in their Office 365 business implementation, that you had to actually turn off some setting, or you could inadvertently share things through docs.com without realizing that your administrator had opened it up to public sharing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And if that's the case, then that is a bigger deal. And it, Microsoft obviously needs to be clear that, hey, if you do this, you got to make sure you shut off public sharing. So what they did instead was, I think they pulled the search capability out of docs.com because people were able to just go and search and go, hey, let me look for all Word files with passwords in them and pull them up. So, I think that what they did to just kind of shut this down in the short term was to take away the search capability. I don't know if that's the permanent solution or what else they're going to do there, but yeah.
At least it raised awareness of the fact that Microsoft has a service called docs.com.
That was the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Well, so is it sort of like, you know, when you are using Dropbox or Slack or something and you want to share a file and you just say, you know, anyone with this link can have the file? Like maybe people were thinking about it like that. Like I would never share a file like that that had passwords in it, but I also wouldn't think that someone would have the capacity to search all those files by keywords.
Right. I know. And I feel like that the if you wanted a Microsoft solution for what you just described, you would use OneDrive or OneDrive for Business or SharePoint, right? You wouldn't use docs.com. Right. I feel like maybe they didn't explain enough for people to understand that this is more like, it's almost like a way to advertise on a public-facing website, something that you want to share broadly and publicly. And it's not... Like, I think I read somebody saying some people were posting like their divorce papers and they were getting out to the public and like, sure. You know, job offers and like things you're like, why were people even putting this in docs.com? Mm-hmm. I don't quite get it. I understand why people might put that in their OneDrive tax forms. Right. But docs.com just it's got a different purpose to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes when my mom has something to tell me, like she's picking my kids up from school or something, she'll post it on my Facebook wall, and it's not the best place to do that.
Listen, we could do an entire show about how parents use Facebook. My father went on to his own timeline or whatever and typed the words "Happy Birthday" as a post. It was clearly some friend of his who was having a birthday. To which I replied, "And Dad wins the internet." You know, like just like classic dad. You know, like out of touch. Yeah.
All right. So chatbots. That's the next topic on our agenda. AI, a new AI chatbot. What's the news there?
Yeah. So if you followed Microsoft's progress in chatbots, they've had a little bit of a spotty image here. Mm-hmm. Remember Tay, the chatbot bot that they announced last year. And they made it a little too lenient and people trained it to spew some very racist and horrible things. So Microsoft pulled it. They followed up Tay with something called Zo. That's still out there. That's like a teen girl you can chat with in chatbot form. And I accidentally today stumbled onto another one. There's another Microsoft chatbot. And I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce this. It's R-U-U-H. Rua? I don't know. It's meant for the Indian subcontinent, English-speaking part of the Indian subcontinent. They describe Rua as a Desi AI who never stops talking. Yep. It's another, like, you know, teen-type thing where it's a chatbot that Microsoft built. They quietly launched it, it looks like, in February. I found the Facebook page for it, and Microsoft applied for a trademark for it, so... It's in very limited use, it looks like. It doesn't look like a lot of people know about it. But interesting they're doing something like this specific to the Indian market, and it makes me wonder if they may do other AI chatbot-type products for other markets, which I asked them and I have not heard back. But kind of interesting. They really are trying to make a play in bots at Microsoft. They've got the bot framework, and they've got a bot developer kit and the Azure bot service, and they've been testing the market in various ways with their own chatbots. So if you're into chatbots and you're in India, you might want to check out this particular one and see what you think.
It sounds like they're making a play at teenagers. I mean, with Zoe, I know they limited it just to Kick or to some other social media service that only kids use.
Yeah, they started it with Kick, and I think they broadened it a little bit after that, but... this one, I don't know what chat services, services this is on. I just found the Facebook page, but I was looking for it on the web and on Twitter, and I couldn't find it.
Mm. All right. Is it time for tips and picks?
Think. Back of the book.
Right. Why not?
All right. So tip number one, get the creators update as quickly as possible. This was promised. You promised this before, Paul?
I did. It's going to be pretty disappointing because... I just found out that Microsoft has eliminated my number one tip around that. Let me just find my page here. So the other day, the downloads for the final version of the Creators Update were secretly made available. Probably they were just testing it or whatever. And I linked to those. But now they've replaced them with plain text files. Jerks. But but here's another workaround you can try now. I've heard from some people this works fine. I've heard from others they're not getting it. But Microsoft makes some software called the Windows 10 Upgrade Assistant. And so if you're running the latest version, the latest shipping version of Windows 10, in other words, not an insider preview version, you should be able to run this and actually upgrade to the Creators Update today. And I believe that still works. I'm going to test that actually after the show on a couple of machines and see what happens. I'm on the insider preview here. But I've had people send me screenshots of it working, so that should still be around. And then generally speaking, obviously, when the Creators Update does come out in early April, you can wait for it to hit on Windows Update, which will be based on where your machine is on that matrix of known good hardware configurations. But Microsoft always does make that ISO or that set of ISOs available to everybody publicly. So if you want to upgrade to that thing immediately, you'll be able to do so on April 11th if you want to, and probably before then. I think Mary Jo mentioned something about MSDN. I suspect those guys and business customers will probably get it a little early, but they haven't said anything about that. So, yeah, the cool direct download thing, which was the whole point of this tip, I just, you know, due diligence, just checked on it, and it doesn't work anymore. So, they caught on to it, I guess.
Yeah.
So, oh, well.
All right. Well, you can you still get Outlook.com premium for
free? Yeah. So this has been kind of a weird one. Earlier this year, there were rumors that Microsoft was testing a premium version of Outlook.com. And in January, they just released it. They didn't announce it. They just said, here it is. And I believe it was U.S. only, or maybe U.S. and Canada only at the time. But they were offering a special deal. It's normally going to be $49.95 per year. And for that much money, what you get is custom domain access to Outlook.com. So in other words, instead of paul@hotmail.com, you can have paul@thrive.com or whatever. For 5 accounts, shared calendars, and so forth. And so $49.95 a year, not counting the price of the domain. Domains are typically $10 a year. It's pretty good. It's you could compare that to, say, custom domain on Google. You'd have to sign up for G Suite, is probably $60 a year. So I think it's about the same amount of money. But if you sign up before the end of March, which is 2 days from now, you can get it for $19.95 a year. And the wording suggests, now this could be completely wrong, but if you look at the wording on the site, it suggests that you will get that pricing, you know, for the foreseeable, like not just for this year, but going forward. Recently, they updated the web page. Again, they've never announced this. They've never said anything about this. But now Outlook.com Premium is available in other regions as well. So you can get it in Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, Ireland, Singapore, and the United Kingdom. So you have 2 days to go. So if you hear this on Friday, you're going to want to move quickly because this offer is going to end soon. And the pricing is obviously localized. So I'm not sure each country, you know, what the exact pricing is, but it's roughly the equivalent of $19.95 a year in US dollars. So that's a savings of $30 for at least the first year, possibly for longer than that on a yearly basis as well. So it's a cool service. I feel like we talked about Outlook.com Premium recently for some reason. But this change is important because of the availability now in additional countries.
All right. The app pick of the week is Cortana on Android and iOS. Who's picking
this? So I'm actually using Cortana on Android and iOS. It's honestly not as full featured as the built. Well, it's not as full featured as Google Assistant, that's for sure. And so I recently I was away last week internationally, and it was really interesting to watch these things kind of pop up with information about where I was. Like Google has a really good way of saying, hey, you're at this particular airport. Here's all the stuff you can do here. Here's the weather here. Here's the currency conversion here. Here's, you know, news from the area, whatever. They're really, really kind of good about that. Cortana does a kind of a similar job. It can't be as proactive typically on Android, and certainly not on iOS as the built-in assistant can be. But it got a big update this week. Earlier in March, there was an update that allowed you to access Cortana from the lock screen, meaning you're not signed into the device yet, but it was read-only. And so you could kind of look at your schedule basically and say, okay, there's enough information maybe for me to know what I'm going to do next. But now they've updated it so you can interact with it. And so it works like it does. You have to enable this, obviously. You have to okay it because some people might not want that. But the idea is that you could dive into something in your schedule or learn more information about whatever it's displaying. So it's gone from basically from read-only to interactive, but only on Android, right? Because I don't know that Microsoft will ever be able to change Cortana on iOS because of the way the system's locked down to behave this way on that platform. And this is something we talk about sometimes on the show, that Android is just kind of a more open system and gives Microsoft these, you know, unique capabilities that they can't really do on an iPhone or iOS device. So anyway, if you're a Microsoft guy, and I know that you are, you should give Cortana a look. It's gotten a lot better. You know, the early versions were very basic. There's a lot of configuration and customizability and so forth, and a lot of new capabilities. And it's really getting there. And I had a tip previously how you can actually replace the Google Assistant if you want, so that when you long press on that home button on the home screen, it actually goes to Cortana instead of to the Google Assistant, which is another one of those things, you know, that you'll never be able to do on an iPhone.
Yeah, it's Siri's blocking the door. She's not letting anyone in. It's not just Cortana.
The barbarians are at the gate.
I've used the newest, the version of Cortana on iOS. I think it came out early March, and it's definitely prettier and it's useful, but it's, you know, it's just like, if you can't just press the home button and get it automatically, you're probably never going to use it. So
exactly right. Yep, that's right.
All righty. The enterprise pick of the week is Dynamic 365 for operations on premium.
Woo! On premises.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't spell it out. So we're almost in April, and April happens to be the month when Microsoft is going to make a preview available of one of the parts of Dynamics 365. So Dynamics 365, if you need a refresher, and I'm sure Paul does, is Microsoft's CRM and ERP service that they made by combining different parts of their existing CRM and ERP products together. One module in this service is called Dynamics 365 for Operations. It's basically ERP software that Microsoft turned into a service. When they first announced this, they said, okay, it's a cloud service. That's it. It's a cloud. It's in the cloud. You know, that's that. But if you think about how people use ERP software, which is like your financial software, your manufacturing software, a lot of people have proprietary information in there and they don't want it in the cloud. So the next thing Microsoft did was say, okay, we'll do a hybrid thing where you can take some of your data, keep it on-prem, work with the cloud service, combine the two. Then they relented a little further recently and they said, all right, we're going to make an option available for people who want the whole thing on-premises. So that's the thing that is going to go into preview in April, the Dynamics 365 for operations piece that's going to be on-prem. So if you're interested in this, the one thing to know is because of the way they built Dynamics 365, if you go with the on-premises solution, the all on-prem, there are going to be a lot of things you won't get. You're going to not be able to use things like synced capability with Power BI, Azure Machine Learning, diagnostics, monitoring. So that you are definitely going to have a kind of stripped down experience. But for some people who said it was a deal breaker if this was not available for them to use exclusively on-prem, you will be very interested in this preview that is coming up in April. What Microsoft has said so far is this summer, both the hybrid and the on-prem versions of Dynamics 365 for operations should be available for purchase. So it's not that far away. If you want to kick the tires, April's the time. We don't know the exact day yet. That's my enterprise pick.
And the codename pick of the week, Windows Home Loop.
Yeah, so this is one I want everyone who's listening to the show to try to help me figure out. The guy who we know as the walking cat, we talk about him a lot on the show.
That guy.
He's really good at finding code names and trademarks. So he's
Do you
found
know
out
he's a guy?
I do know he's a guy, okay. But I don't know who he is.
Okay.
He found a Microsoft trademark, a recent one, for something called Windows Home Loop. Home Loop is all one word, home and capital L, loop.
It's a new surface loop.
Yeah, so what is it, right? My guess, he and I were going back and forth about, what do you think this is? My guess is, I'm thinking this could be this service that we talked about a while ago on Windows Weekly called Evoke, or there's a thing called Evoke Studios. And that group at Microsoft is developing a digital memory service. So it's going to be something to help you keep track of your photos and videos in a new, interesting way. We don't really know anything about that. But just the term loop made me think it might have something to do with video or audio or photos somehow.
Are you talking about that thing they showed a build a few years back? That kind of
like my really life 3D. Bits.
Yeah, it was like a loop. Well, I don't,
a loop? No, not really. Tell me more.
It was a curved display of photos.
Yes, I think that was it, right? Wasn't that it? It was like how you would better organize and more creatively, word of the day, creatively combine your photos and videos into some kind of a storytelling type thing. I don't know if this is what that is, but I thought I'd throw it out there as a product name or a code name to see if anybody who is listening to Windows Weekly either now or later has any clues. And if you do, send them to us because I'm very curious what this is.
Well, I think it's an Apple thing because, you know, Infinite Loop, that's the Apple
right?
<Yeah. laughs> address one Infinite Loop. So I think probably my guess and my sources have not confirmed this because I don't have any sources, but that it is finally Microsoft and Apple coming together to create something that you can wear on your face.
Here we go. Back to the PC on the face thing.
Wow. It's a code name Face Hugger.
Yeah. What about like some sort of home Cortana device, like the Amazon Echo or the Google Home? Has that ever been thrown around?
No, but that's an interesting idea because I keep wondering if Microsoft will do it. They've got a third party who said they're building something that's like an Amazon Echo Dot. Harman Kardon, the speaker company, they're building something that's going to use Cortana. But I don't think that's what Home Loop is, but I don't know. Again, I don't know if Microsoft itself might be building something like that.
Right. And desperately waiting the beer pick of the week. Everyone in the chat room can't wait. They think it's Budweiser, but it's not.
Actually, before you do the beer pick, we should make them wait because I just want to, before I forget, somebody on Twitter, Joseph Chang, pointed out that Microsoft just changed the date of the offer expiration for for Outlook.com Premium. So it's no longer expiring on March 31st. It's now expiring on June 30th, which is a lot more time. But the other thing is this suggests that I believe that you're actually going to get it at $19.95 going forward. It literally does say your subscription will automatically renew at $19.95 per year. Annually, I should say. So it does seem like you're going to get that price, but it also appears that you get the first year for free. So the subscription itself is $19.95 a year. It's free for the first year. So you should totally do this. and then it's only $19.95 a year after that. You still have to pay $10 a year for the custom domain, but you could get that from another provider, right? You could go to Namecheap or GoDaddy or whatever. If you do it through Microsoft, it's $10 per year, which is, you know, the going rate. So anyway, I just wanted to let people know that this is an even better deal than I said, and you do have more time so you can relax. Hopefully you're already relaxed. Sorry about that.
If you're not, you will be after you drink this beer pick. How's that for a segue?
Yep, excellent.
So my beer pick this week is from Chicago. The company is called Half Acre. They make a lot of really good IPAs, pails, double IPAs. And a Windows Weekly listener, whose name is Devon or Devio from Chicago, I think he goes by both, he hand carried a bunch of these beers for me and left them at Rattle and I picked them up. And the one I'm making my beer pick out of what he brought is called Tuna, Half Acre Tuna. What does the word tuna have to do with beer? Nothing.
It doesn't taste like tuna?
No, does not taste like tuna. In fact, when you go on their site...
It smells like tuna. It's the ideal drink.
Doesn't smell like tuna. Here's what they say on their website. Why is this beer called tuna? We don't know. Just say it. I'll take a tuna. It feels good. The ocean is a magical place. No idea. Yeah. Guys, that's all it says. The can that it comes in looks a little like scales of fish. So maybe that has something to do with it. But it really doesn't taste like tuna. It tastes like a really great pale with good hops, a little like papaya, peach, guava flavor. And the best part, only 4.7%. So you can have more than one and not feel all full from having too much tuna.
I love it. Okay, did we miss anything? What did I forget to say? Do ask?
No, I think we got it all in.
Any anecdotes, any poems?
Oh, we had a nice time at Rattle yesterday. Paul was in town. We get to hang out.
Oh, that's nice.
He wasn't drinking beer though, so that was kind of unusual.
Because he thought it smelled like tuna.
But I was eating tuna, so that
was okay. So it all worked out.
Yep.
All right. Well, make sure to send your predictions of what Home Loop is. Where should they send them?
You can send them to me. Send them to me on Twitter. I'll take a look into it. If anyone has guesses, thoughts, wishes, send them along.
Dreams,
hopes.
So anything that you're working on, Mary Jo, that we haven't mentioned?
I've mentioned it before on the show, but I'll mention it one more time. I'm doing some work with Paul's company, BWW, not Blue Whale, BWW Media. I'm doing this new thing with them where I am promoting people who are really interesting in the enterprise tech community, and I'm writing them up every day of the week and doing a little promo post about them and why you should follow them and read them. So if you have anybody who you think I should write up, you should email me. My address is on the petri.com site. And you can nominate yourself. You can nominate your spouse. You can nominate colleagues or whoever you think is interesting. I just am looking for cool, interesting people who write about enterprise tech. So that's one new thing I'm working on.
Awesome. All about Microsoft.com at Mary Jo Foley on Twitter. Paul Thurrott, anything else that we need to talk about that you're working on?
I'm just confused why I've never been highlighted by Mary Jo Foley in this article series she's talking about, but that's okay.
You're not an enterprise guy, are you?
Lapsed. I'm like a lapsed Catholic and enterprise guy. I'm working on a bunch of hardware reviews. So I've got this desktop I talked about earlier and a bunch of laptops you can see behind me. So I'm hoping to crank those out sometime soon, but that's probably most of it.
Thurrott.com at Thurrott on Twitter. And we'll still have a little while to wait for the Windows 10 creators update. That was fake news at the top of the show. It's not available now.
So, alternative facts.
Yes, alternative facts. Well, thank you both so much for all your wisdom, knowledge. Thanks for laying it all on us today. Of course, Windows Weekly is recorded every week, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, which is other times, other places. But you can get it whenever you want. You have the option to subscribe at twit.tv. You can get it. Subscribe with all your devices and subscribe for a friend. Just, you know, if you see their phone or computer laying around, just take it and subscribe to Windows Weekly. You know they need it, right? So
you do need it.
Exactly. All right, I guess that's it. We will see Leo Laporte next week. You will not see me next week, but I am Megan Maroney, and you can see me on Tech News Today every day at 4 p.m. Pacific, and I am at Megan Maroney on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening or watching.